July 8th. But which parts of them will you nurture?
What the circumstances of your upbringing were make a significant difference in how well you do in the world. Malcolm Gladwell.
Here's an interesting idea, perhaps not totally supported by science, but true enough to jibe with experience. We contain within us at birth or at an early age all the virtues and vices we will have in our lives. All our strengths and weaknesses are there more or less from the beginning. The question for a parent then, and for educators and mentors, is which of those strengths and virtues will you nourish? Which vices will you allow to fester? In the beautiful novel Memoirs of Hadrian, Hadrian pours out his heart to a young Marcus Aurelius, his adopted grandson. He explains, "I was at 20 much what I am today, but not consistently so. Not everything in me was bad, but it could have been. The good and the better parts also lent strength to the worst. We all have good traits and bad ones. What matters then, what your job is as a parent, is to help your kids nurture their good parts and give them strength to challenge their bad parts. We need to help them become who they can be. We need to help them be consistent, consistently the best version of themselves." July 9th. Don't let them wish to not be who they are. One of the more vulnerable moments of Pete Buttigieg's pioneering campaign for president as a front-running openly gay man came in South Carolina when he talked about how he struggled with his identity, with his sexuality. "When I was younger," he said, "I would have done anything to not be gay. When I began to halfway realize what it meant that I felt the way I did about people, it launched me into something that I can only describe as a kind of war. And if that war had been settled on the terms I would have wished for, I would not be standing here. If you had offered me a pill to make me straight, I would have swallowed it before you had time to give me a sip of water. It's hard to think about that now. It's hard to face the truth that there were times in my life where if you could have shown me exactly what it was inside me that made me gay, I would have cut it out with a knife." No parent ever wants to hear that their kid would like to cut out a part of themselves, that their son or daughter is at war with themselves. Of course, much of the shame and doubt that Pete felt had nothing to do with his parents and everything to do with the time and culture he was growing up, but nevertheless, it's your job to make sure your kids know that there isn't a part of them that you'd want them to change if they could. It's your job to show them that you love the whole them. Through your words, your actions, and your choices, you must teach and prove to them that they make the world better just by being in it and by being themselves. July 10th. Work with them to find their lane.
As we bring up our children, we have to remember that we are caretakers of the future. By improving their education, we improve the future of mankind, the future of this world. Immanuel Kant.
John Adams's father wanted nothing but for his son to go to college. John Adams wanted to do anything but go to school. He often skipped class to go fishing or hunting or fly his kite. He didn't like his teachers. He didn't think he was learning anything useful. He had no interest in furthering his education. So when he declared that he wanted to be a farmer, his father took him down to the salt marsh to cut thatch and wade through muck, showing him what that work would actually be like. The next day, John went back to school, though soon enough he was struggling again. "I don't like my schoolmaster," he told his father. "He is so negligent and cross that I can never learn anything under him." The next day, Adams's father enrolled him in the private school down the road. And there, under a schoolmaster named Joseph Marsh, Adams made a dramatic turn. He was studying, he was reading. In less than a year, the 15-year-old was pronounced fitted for college. The following fall, he was enrolled at Harvard. Our job as parents is to put our kids in environments in which they can thrive and blossom. Our job is to work with them to find their lane. That environment may not be the first school we drop them into. Might take several tries and a fair amount of experimentation. It will definitely take patience. That doesn't matter. What matters is that we help them realize who they are meant to be. July 11th. Let them decide.
If I had one wish for my children, it would be that each of you would dare to do the things that have meaning for you as individuals, but not worrying if you don't please everyone. Lillian Carter.
When Will Ferrell was in middle school, he qualified for the Gifted and Talented After-School Enrichment Program, and so his mom signed him up. When Will found out, he told her there was a conflict. He had signed himself up for square dancing, and he could only do one or the other. To a parent, this is an obvious choice. It's not even a discussion. We know which one will teach more, which one will look better for career prospects, which one is cooler. But our kids, they don't know anything about decision-making. They don't know about mental models. They don't know about long-term consequences or second-order thinking. They don't know about weighing pros and cons. They don't know what's best for them. They only know what they like, what excites them, what they want right now. But as actress and fellow SNL cast member Anna Gasteyer tells the story, Will's mom put all that aside. She looked at her son and said, "It's up to you. You decide." And Will chose square dancing. And that, to me, Gasteyer said, sums up why Will is the amazing Will Ferrell. It explained, in her mind, how Will Ferrell became one of the greatest comedic actors of all time. His parents had encouraged and allowed him to. They didn't intrude with their real-world priorities. They let him follow his heart. When your kid feels a pull towards something creative and fulfilling, the worst thing you can do as a parent is to prevent them from going in that direction. Your job, it's worth repeating over and over again whenever there's a chance, is to encourage them to be who they are, to follow their natural inclinations, to decide what they want to do after school.
July 12th. Don't judge them too harshly or too quickly. In the spring of 1921, a young ball player named Lou Gehrig had a tryout for the great John McGraw at the Polo Grounds. McGraw was the manager of the New York Giants and one of the greatest evaluators of talent in the history of the game. It was a good tryout. Gehrig hit a few deep shots. He was lively and quick. He was already showing off his almost inhumanly large lower body, which was the key to his power at the plate. But then Gehrig headed to first base, where he promptly let an easy ball go through his feet. According to biographers, the tryout ended almost immediately. McGraw had seen all he needed to see. We might call this moment McGraw's folly. In an instant, he sized up and judged this kid. Make no mistake, Gehrig was a kid. He was painfully shy and sheltered, inexperienced. And McGraw's inability or unwillingness to factor that into his evaluation meant that he would miss out on the career of one of the game's greatest talents and human beings. Gehrig would go on to play first base for the Yankees, hit hundreds of home runs, win 6 World Series, and hold the record for the longest consecutive starts for over 50 years. Maybe he would have been worth a little more patience, a slightly more open mind. It's essential that we learn from these misses when it comes to talent. People are ciphers, even our own kids. We are not nearly as good at evaluating ability and predicting the future as we think we are. So we have to be forgiving. We can't jump to conclusions. We have to give kids the benefit of the doubt. We have to root for them, not write them off. July 13th. Teach them to choose.
If your choices are beautiful, so too will you be. Epictetus.
It makes sense that parents make most of the decisions for their kids. Parents know more. Kids basically know nothing about life, about what the weather is going to be tomorrow, about how the world works. The problem with this is that you're depriving your kids of a very important skill, the ability to make decisions. Is it any wonder that so many teenagers are utterly overwhelmed when it comes to choosing where to go to college or what to major in? For most of them, it's the first real decision they've made in their whole lives. That's why, as a parent, you have to actively work not to choose everything for them. Ask them whether they want to go to the park or play catch in the yard. Ask them what movie they want to see. What should we cook for dinner? Do you want to take a shower tonight or a bath? Would you rather try out for the baseball team or the basketball team? If you don't like mowing the lawn, what's another chore you could do that would contribute around the house? Shorts or pants today? Go pick out something to wear. Teach them how to choose. Empower them. Make sure they know how to decide. And be okay with their decision even if they decide wrong. It doesn't matter that you know more. What matters is that you let them learn. A life is the sum and substance of a person's decisions. Prepare them to make good decisions so they can make the best possible life for themselves. July 14th. You must adjust accordingly. The scientist Jennifer Doudna's father was an English professor. It wasn't until he had a young daughter that he realized almost all the books he assigned to his students were written by men. Having a daughter made him realize how acutely unfair this was, how this deprived his students of valuable perspectives and inspiration. So, as Walter Isaacson writes in his fascinating biography of Jennifer Doudna and the work that won her a Nobel Prize, her father quietly added Doris Lessing, Anne Tyler, and Joan Didion to his syllabus. He started bringing books home to his daughter that might inspire her too. Like a good father and a human being, he adjusted, not out of political correctness, but out of real empathy. And what was the effect? Did he lose his spine or his manhood? Did censorship win? No, his choice made the world better. His students were better, and his ability to connect with his daughter was better. And then decades later, the world became better as a result of this adjustment. And you can thank Doudna, and by extension, her father, for your family's COVID-19 mRNA vaccine. Don't be frozen in time. Don't close your mind. Be open and adjust. July 15th. Always keep their interests in mind.
You should remember that in every person lives the same spirit which lives in us. Arthur Schopenhauer.
There will always be a gulf between parents and their children, at least when it comes to taste. And this is as it should be. Your tastes were informed by years of experience and theirs by the yet unjaded joy of discovery. Why would you like what they like? You know more. And still, it remains imperative if you want to connect with them and shape and encourage them that you always keep their interests in mind. Because your job is to figure out what they like and help them continue to explore it. Oh, they liked this movie? Here's another they might enjoy. Oh, they like this book? Here's that author's entire catalog for their birthday. Oh, they like dinosaurs? Here come the weekend trips to museums. Here come the photos of you in front of the Brachiosaurus at the United Terminal at O'Hare. Here comes the dinosaur video you can watch together. When their interests become your interests, they become opportunities to connect and explore and share. Let them be the driver. You must provide the fuel. July 16th. Original is better than smart.
The C students run the world. Harry Truman.
We think we want smart kids, and that's why we monitor their grades, why we hire tutors, why we help them study for the SATs. It's even how we find ourselves praising them. You are so smart. But is this really setting them up for success in life? The essayist, the entrepreneur, and the venture capitalist Paul Graham warns parents against fighting the last war, trying to get their kids into good colleges than to get good jobs available to smart people. Einstein wasn't special because he was smart, Graham writes, but because he had original ideas. Think of the people we admire most. They share that feature. It wasn't that they were smart. It was that they had a different way of looking at the world. They were unique. And with this uniqueness, which was often coupled with intelligence, they did great things. So as you try to mold your child, well, maybe stop trying to mold them and just help guide them as they grow. Encourage them to be their original, unique selves. Encourage them to explore, to find new things. The world is full of smart people, and most of them are insufferably boring and unimpressive. What we need are fresh thinkers and creative people. What we need are originals. July 17th. Your job is to show them what's possible. That the children of successful people turn out spoiled and lazy is a cliche that has proven itself true across time more often than any parent would like to admit. But there is also no shortage of examples that subvert this preconception. There are numerous professional athletes with kids who make it to the pros. Both John Quincy Adams and George W. Bush followed their fathers to the White House. There are plenty of artists and writers whose children went on to be successful in the arts. How does this work? Well, obviously, there was no shortage of natural talent, nepotism too. These kids were gifted and then given big advantages. But there is another force at play too, one that every parent should think about. Could it be that the biggest privilege afforded to these kids was seeing their parents passionately and practically pursue a career that most people have trouble even imagining? That the real gift they got was seeing that following your dreams was actually possible, and that it wasn't magic, it was just a lot of hard work. Too many parents spend time either consciously or subtly telling their kids to think small, to be realistic, to consider the odds. But living in the same house as a professional athlete or a head of state or an award-winning author sends a powerful message. It can be done. It just takes work, takes dedication, and of course, confidence. And that's your real job, whatever you do for a living, to show them what's possible, to push them to go for it, whatever it is. July 18th. Don't give them this. The biggest impediment to happiness in life is something many of us picked up at a very early time in our lives. Shame. Shame is guilt's evil twin. Where guilt is feeling bad about things that you've done, shame is feeling bad for who you are, for things about yourself that you don't control. Having normal biological urges, being uncoordinated, having unique artistic tastes, struggling with social cues, having a limited palate or an extremely adventurous one. There's almost no limit to the things about ourselves that we are capable of feeling shame over. And what's so tragic about shame, though, is that it doesn't come naturally. Watch an innocent child play intently with their food or pretend completely to be a princess or a dragon, and there isn't a whisper of shame to be heard because they have not been yet made to feel ashamed about these things. Shame is inherited. It's passed along, often by parents, on the back of cutting remarks, unnecessary judgments, and thoughtless choices. It's up to you not to let them inherit shame. It's up to you to let them be their own people, to let them be comfortable in their own skin. Pretending to be dragons, flailing to music you don't like, trying things you yourself would never try, it doesn't matter, as long as it matters to them. Embrace your children so that they might embrace the things that make them unique and holy themselves. There's no shame in that. July 19th. Encourage them to be the best. There are parents who just want their kids to have fun, and there are parents who push their kids to be winners. One side believes that competition doesn't matter, and the other side believes competition is the only thing that matters. Like so many two-sided debates, there's a third option that both sides miss, which is actually far superior to either, though much more nuanced. The great John Wooden, one of the winningest coaches in college basketball history, said that he learned it from his father. Dad's message about basketball and life, he said, was this: Johnny, don't try to be better than somebody else, but never cease trying to be the best that you can be. You have control over that. The other, you don't. And it was simple advice. Work hard, very hard, at those things I can control. Don't lose sleep over the rest of it. As you put your kid out there in soccer or on the debate team, as you talk to them about their class rank or mile time, make sure that you are letting them know that how they compare with other people is far less important than how they measure up against their own potential. Somebody who gives their best effort at everything they do is going to go much further in life, have a much happier one, than somebody who is obsessed with coming in first place or who never earnestly tries for fear that they will lose. So tell your kids to be the best that they can be. Tell them to measure themselves against their own potential, their own progress. Not only does that usually lead to winning, but it's also what winners do. July 20th. Help them go find it. A young Kwame Onwuachi was cooking with his mother in their apartment in the Bronx when suddenly the apartment was overwhelmed by a strange smell. As he would write in his memoir, the thick, fragrant smell of curry came on so strong, both of us stopped what we were doing and looked up. But it wasn't actually the smell that he remembered. It's what his mother did next. "Let's go find it," she said to him with a sense of palpable excitement. And then together they raced down the hallways of each floor of their building, trying to locate the source. As soon as the doors opened on the third floor, they knew they were close. And without so much as a hesitation, his mother knocked on the door that had so beckoned her. "My name is Jewel," she said. "This is my son. We live on the sixth floor. We couldn't help but smell what you were cooking." The woman was stunned, fear registered on her face. Were they going to complain? Were they going to say something offensive? No, that wasn't his mother's style. "It smells wonderful," she said. "I don't know how to say this, but we'd like to try it." How did her son go on to start his own catering company, graduate from the Culinary Institute, work at Per Se, and start one of the most talked about restaurants in America before his 24th birthday? It can all be traced back to this surreal exchange. His mother showed him in that moment so many wonderful traits: curiosity, confidence, assertiveness, figure-outableness, passion, neighborliness. These are all things that we can and must teach our children in our own way. But it starts by following our nose. July 21st. Stop trying to change them.
My wife and I, our whole job is to provide, to protect, to love, to facilitate. It's to find out who our children are. Find out their likes and their dislikes, and try to help them through life to find themselves. It's not about us. Dwayne Wade.
We should always try to learn from parents who have had it harder than us, who have really been through the ringer. Brandon Boulware is the son of a minister. He's a lawyer, an avowed Christian man, a husband, and a father of four children. In 2021, he gave a deeply moving testimony to the Missouri House of Representatives about his struggles with his transgender daughter. He told the lawmakers that he had long tried, out of fear and love and a desire to protect, to keep his child from wearing girls' clothes and playing on girls' teams. And then one day she asked him if she could go play with the neighbors. "It's time for dinner," he said. "But if I go out in boys' clothes, can I play with them?" came the reply. And that's when it hit him. He'd accidentally taught his daughter that not being who she was a way to be rewarded. What Boulware so beautifully communicates in his brief testimony is a lesson for all parents. Let them have their childhood, he pleads. Let them be who they are. Maybe you're artistic and your kid is not. Maybe you're athletic and your kid is not. Maybe you're not religious and your teenager is. Maybe you're liberal and your kid is not. Whatever it is, let them be who they are. Let them experiment. Let them discover themselves. Let them discover their truths. Let them have their childhoods. You might not like the results of that exploration. They might challenge your most deeply held assumptions. But guess what? That's a you problem. July 22nd. They don't know what they want.
Nobody knows anything. William Goldman.
As a parent, it's really easy to force your kids to do stuff. You're bigger than them. You control the purse strings. You possess the legal and moral authority to make them do what you think is best for them. But when you wield that power without so much as a conversation, you're teaching them that they have no power, no control, that their wishes don't really matter in your house, in this life. And you're also setting up a really bad habit for yourself, because you won't always have this power over them. You don't want to habituate a kind of disrespect for or a disinterest in what they think they want. Because one day, they'll want to change their college major. They'll want to move across the country. They'll want to make some lifestyle change that you disagree with. They'll want to tweak some long-standing family tradition. And you'll be so used to thinking that you know better, that you are the decider, that you won't be able to handle it. Especially the part where they don't have to listen to you. But worse than that, your relationship with your kids won't be able to weather the fallout from your egotistical implosion. Your kids don't always know what they want. But guess what? Nobody does. So you have to figure out how to be in charge without being a tyrant. How to generally know better without being a know-it-all. You're going to have to learn how to use the gravity of your experience to move them gently in the direction they should go, instead of using the mass of your position as a parent to force them that way. And this won't be easy, but such is the life and the balance of being a parent. July 23rd. How often do you say no? Even those of us who don't think of ourselves as strict parents should stop and think how often our kids hear us say the word no. As in, no, stop that. As in, no, you can't go out tonight. No, get off there. No, we have to go home. No, I'm not buying that. No, that's not how you do it. It's not that we're demanding. It's just that we care. And this might keep them safe, but the downside is that from the perspective of a 2-year-old or a 20-year-old, it means that basically all they hear their parents say is no, 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 no. Harry Truman, father of a daughter, Margaret, had a clever quip about this. He said, "I found the best way to give advice to your children is to find out what they want to do and then advise them to do it." His point is that nobody likes to be told what to do, and your job isn't to make them do the things you want them to do. It's to help them do the things that they want to do, safely and within reason, of course. It's their life, after all. Learn how to say yes. Learn how to advise them what they were going to do anyway, so that if you can't stop it, you can at least prepare them. Be the person who helps, not the kind of parent who only gets in the way. July 24th, you have to listen.
The reason why we have 2 ears and only 1 mouth is so we might listen more and talk less. Zeno.
Shortly after the release of his book, Parents Who Lead, Dr. Stuart Friedman, an award-winning psychologist and leading researcher on leadership and work-life integration, was asked what great new discoveries or insights he came across in the process of writing the book. "My favorite," he said, "was how much parents have to gain by learning how to listen to their children about what they really need." As Dr. Friedman elaborated, it's often quite surprising to hear what's actually on their minds and how you can be a better leader in your family when you know what's in the hearts and minds of those precious people who look up to you. One father who was keen to impress upon his son the value of curiosity and study asked him what he was interested in learning. To his utter delight, his son said, "I want to learn how to vacuum." His son wanted to be useful. He wanted to contribute and have a purpose himself. You don't really know, in other words, what's inside until you pay attention with dedication and compassion like effective leaders do, he said. The little fellow is always trying to tell you something. Of course, it's not often explicit. Sometimes, "I want to learn to be useful" comes out as "I want to learn how to vacuum."
And sometimes I want to be a good friend comes out as, can you drive me to Bobby's house? And sometimes I want to be a writer comes out as an awkward kid who doesn't want to watch sports with you. Still, they are always trying to tell you something. And you'll only hear them if you really listen. July 25th. Don't help them become who you were. Tim Hardaway Jr. is the son of an NBA Hall of Famer. Growing up, it was hard being the son of someone who'd played the game at such a high level, particularly while trying to master the same sport himself. In the car on the way home from games, Tim Sr. would highlight the mistakes that Tim Jr. had made, the shots he could have made, the plays he should have made. He'd say, you're not performing at a high enough level, or get better or we'll stop you playing the game of basketball forever. If Tim Jr. didn't want to watch basketball on TV, Tim Sr. would shake his head and say, you don't love the game enough. Tim Sr. would say that he put this pressure on his son because he loved him. I wanted him to play like I played. He said, to take the game seriously like I took the game seriously. Understand the game like I understood the game. And sure, it worked out in the sense that Tim Hardaway Jr. is a great basketball player too. But is that because his dad said mean things to him or threatened him? Or could it have just as much to do with the fact that he's 6'5", that he has a 6'7" wingspan and played in college for a great coach? And let's say that it hadn't worked out, or that it just worked out less well. Don't you think that father and son, in retrospect, would have taken that trade if it meant they had a better relationship? As we said, our job is to help our kids become who they are. It's not to help them become who we were. It's not their responsibility to carry on our legacy, to play the sport that you played, or to wear the number that you wore. July 26. What are you making them do? There's a line adapted from Aristotle, but given to us by the historian Will Durant. We are what we repeatedly do. Therefore, excellence is not an act, but a habit. The real question as parents is, what are you making your kids do? Excellence isn't a thing that we pursue as a destination. It's something we pursue in the doing. Day in and day out, it's the little things as well as the big things. It's something that emerges when we turn that type of pursuit through action into a habit. And it's our job as parents to help kids understand this, to help them realize who they are by what they do day to day, what they do this day, today. We are what we repeatedly do. July 27th. Why?
I would rather have questions that can't be answered than answers that can't be questioned. Richard Feynman.
As a parent, there is no word you hear more. Why? Why not? Why can't I? Why do I have to? Why does it work like that? Why? And it's annoying to be sure, but you must be sure as a parent to never discourage this. Because so much of what we take for granted as parents, as people, is arbitrary and poorly supported. And perhaps that's because at a young age, our own impulse to question and explore was suppressed. We were not taught to see that most of the rules and limitations of the world have no real basis in logic or reason or even morality. When we asked why, we were told because, full stop. We were not encouraged to challenge assumptions, to question the status quo, to learn why things are the way that they are. And our limited access to wisdom and truth limited us in turn. Let us not continue this tradition. Let's turn over a new leaf with this new generation, the one we are in charge of raising into the best version of themselves. We want our kids to make the world a better place. We want them to improve things. We want them to be better than us. And this can't happen if they are complacent, if they are credulous, if they don't think they are empowered to subject their reality to even the simplest interrogation and demand answers accordingly. Why is a great question. Help them see that. And then help them answer it. July 28th. Give them space.
If you are not careful, their whole lives get filled up. Soccer practice, school, cello lessons, chores at home. You don't want them in front of screens all day. You don't want them to waste their lives or fall behind. You want them to make something of themselves. But you have to be careful. Even 2,000 years ago, Plutarch was warning parents not to overschedule and overplan their kids' lives. Children must be given some breathing space from continued tasks, he wrote, for we must bear in mind that our whole life is divided between relaxation and application. Do you do your best work when you are exhausted and stretched too thin? Are you happy when your calendar is full? Aren't you even tired of running them from place to place? Imagine how they feel. They don't even fully understand what stress is, what burnout is. So it's incumbent on you to protect them from it. Give them space. Give them the opportunity to relax. That's your job. July 29th. Don't get in the way of their primal inclinations. You want to show them your favorite movies, your favorite bands, all the places you loved as a kid, the sports you love to play or watch. And this is special and wonderful because you're sharing not just experiences or sights and sounds or tastes, but parts of yourself. These things shaped who you are and how you became that person. And to share that is to give your kids a deeper look at the person raising them. But you should share with caution. Just as you shouldn't pressure your kids into a certain lane, you need to be a doctor. The author Robert Greene said that parents must be careful with the less overt forms of pressure, steering them to be interested in the things that you are interested in, forcing them to participate in this activity or play that sport, calling the arts or entrepreneurship risky or artists and entrepreneurs crazy. As Robert says, as a parent, you need to let go. You need to let your child blossom. You need to think of your child like they're a plant that you foster and grow in its most natural form and not hinder in any way. You have to let your child go in whatever direction he or she wants. When that child reveals a proclivity towards something, encourage them to go in that direction because that proclivity reveals something extremely powerful from within. It reveals what Robert says he calls the primal inclination. He says, do not get in the way of their primal inclinations in any way, shape, or form. That's the most important thing you can do. Throw away your expectations. Your responsibility is to encourage them to be who they are, not what you want them to be or who you wish that you had become. Don't force your interests on your child. Pay attention to their natural, primal inclinations and then foster this blossoming. July 30th. This is always in their control. We don't get to pick how tall our kids are, and neither do they. It's beyond their control whether they're big or small, whether they have the fastest reflexes or the strongest muscles or the quickest wit. They don't control whether the coach loves them or is a jerk. They don't control most of what happens in the classroom or in the locker room, for that matter. As Cheryl Strayed writes in Tiny Beautiful Things, you don't have the right to the cards you believe you should have been dealt. So what do we tell our kids to focus on then? What is always up to them? What they do in response to those circumstances. What's up to them is whether they do their best or not, whether they try hard, whether they find a way to enjoy the process and live up to their potential. So after practice, after the game, after the big test, you need to make sure that your questions and your criteria for judging them reflect that. Meaning not, did you guys win or did you pass, but did you guys have fun? Did you do your best? What do you think you could have done better to prepare? We don't control the hand we were dealt. Our biology isn't up to us, nor is our place in the world geographically or socioeconomically. But our kids, our families, decide how we play that hand. We decide what we do about it. We decide whether we give it our all. We decide who we become. Teach them that. July 31st. Prepare them to answer the call. to each, Winston Churchill said, there comes in their lifetime a special moment when they are figuratively tapped on the shoulder and offered the chance to do a very special thing, unique to them and fitted to their talents. What a tragedy, he said, if that moment finds them unprepared or unqualified for that which could have been their finest hour. It's more accurate to say that life has many of these such moments, many such taps on the shoulder to serve, to take a risk, to run towards danger while others run away, to do the thing that people say is impossible. Our kids will have many reasons to think that what they're planning is the wrong thing to do. They will be pressured to put their dreams out of their mind. Fear will make itself felt. Will they prevent it from letting them answer the call? Will they leave the phone ringing? Will their moment find them unprepared? Will their finest hour pass them by like a ship in the night? What a tragedy that would be. As parents, we have to make sure it doesn't happen to our kids. We have to help them inch closer and closer for what they were put here to do, to being who they were meant to become. We are supposed to prepare them for when that phone rings, for when they get tapped on the shoulder, because the one thing we know for certain is that the call is going to come. Will they be prepared to answer? August. Always be a fan, the greatest gift you can give them. August 1st, you can give them this gift. Jim Volvano wasn't yet out of high school when he first told his dad what he decided he wanted to do the rest of his life. He wasn't just going to be a collegiate basketball coach, he said. Dad, I'm going to win a national championship. A few days after Jim told his dad about his dream, his dad called him into his bedroom. See that suitcase? His father asked, pointing to his luggage in the corner. Confused, Jim replied, yeah, what's that all about? I'm packed, his dad explained. When you play and win that national championship, I'm going to be there. My bags are already packed. My father, Jim would later say in his legendary ESPY speech, he gave me the greatest gift anyone could give another person. He believed in me. Have you given this gift to your children? Our job is to spur our children to conceive of big dreams, to encourage them to go after them, to give them the greatest gift anyone can give another person, belief. Because if you don't believe in them, who will? August 2nd, just be a fan. Maybe your kid is into weird stuff. Maybe their heavy metal band sucks, or their talents as a rapper are almost offensive. Maybe you can't stand the shows they like. Maybe their dream is an unlikely one at best. Or maybe they are supremely skilled and they have what it takes to go pro. Maybe with the right prodding and the right support, they could truly be special. And you just need to make sure they don't slack off and miss the opportunities they need for that to happen. But is that really your most important job? No. Your job is to be a fan, just a fan, of them, of their talents or lack thereof, of their chances or lack thereof. They don't need a drill sergeant in the living room. They don't need someone calling them out. They don't need someone telling them the hard truths. They don't even necessarily need your money to put them in that fancy league. They don't need you to berate their teachers and demand special treatment. They don't need you to be obsessed. What they need is a fan. They need someone who supports them, who loves them, who is rooting for them. They need a fan with a healthy relationship to the game, not a stalker or a tyrant. Just be a fan. It's not that complicated. August 3rd, what are you going to focus on? You can look at all the negative in the world. You can focus on the dark clouds above, or you can look for the silver lining, the bright spots. We have that expression about whether a glass is half full or half empty. Well, what worldview are you going to teach your kids? Are you going to fill your house with doom and gloom, or are you going to teach your kids hope, to believe in their ability to make a difference, to find the opportunity inside the obstacles that life presents? The author Alex Haley once said that he believed his job as a writer was to find the good and praise it. That fits a parent's job description too. We're always going to have more success rewarding good behavior in our kids than punishing bad behavior. Looking for what we want to see in them and making that our focus is going to get us much further than seeking out conflict and engaging in criticism. This principle extends to our perceptions and portrayal of the world as well. It's better for everyone to talk up what we want to see instead of constantly bemoaning all the evil and wrongness that we can't seem to escape. We have a choice: inspire or disillusion, empower or depress. What will it be? August 4th, don't be a minimizer.
The parenting style that is good for grit is also the parenting style good for most other things. Be really, really demanding and be very, very supportive. Angela Duckworth.
Ed Stack was a great kid. He worked quietly and loyally for the family business, Dick's Sporting Goods. He saved up enough money that eventually he could buy his father out and grow the family legacy. He tells the story of the first big box store that he opened. The company had previously operated stores that were a couple thousand square feet at most. And this new store was 20,000 square feet. It was transformative for the business. Sales skyrocketed. Reps for Nike were talking to Ed's father, the original founder, and said something like, "You must be so proud of your kid to be succeeding like that, to be taking the store to the next level." As Ed explained, "My father could never really quite give you a compliment." And he looked at them and said, "You're right, they did a lot of business. They did 25% more business than they thought they would do in the first month. So they're not really as smart as they think they are." Sadly, who hasn't heard something like this from someone they desperately wanted to make proud? Those backhanded compliments, that way of cutting you down to size, of looking for some flaw, of seizing on your insecurities. What bullshit it is. Instead of taking the opportunity to show their love, they have to let their own fragile sense of self get in the way. The minimum of being a good parent is not being a minimizer. Don't look for what's wrong. Look for what's right and celebrate it. Lift them up. Don't cut them down. Root for them. That's what they want more than anything. August 5th, there are better forms of motivation. Across sports, politics, business, even the arts, we see a theme driving the most ambitious, the hardest working, the biggest risk takers. Be they men or women, they all seem to be craving something, trying to prove something, the approval of their father, the love of their families, to shove it in the face of the doubters, to get as far away as possible from the trauma. It's hard not to see that this is real and productive fuel. As a parent, it should also be hard to see, period. Because there are so many other forms of fuel out there that don't involve pain or what is in many cases a kind of abuse. Tiger Woods was set up to succeed in golf by his father's regimen of hyper-attention as well as neglect. Did that help him? Sure. But given how incredibly talented and smart and hardworking Tiger is, don't you think he could have accomplished a lot without essentially being tortured with prisoner of war tactics? You can subject your kids to hard and difficult things, and it may make them successful. These things may have even helped you be successful. Yelling, blunt truths, endless workouts, emotional manipulation. These things work. They just also have a steep emotional cost. Encouragement and genuine support, on the other hand, work equally well and have the added benefit of bringing you closer to your kids and making you both better people. Choose the right form of motivation, not the harshest. August 6th, seldom should be heard a discouraging word.
The innocent and helpless creature bestowed on them by heaven, whom to bring up to good, and whose future lot it was in their hands to direct to happiness or misery. Mary Wollstonecraft Shelley.
If you are not paying attention, it's easy to slip into a kind of casual, thoughtless negativity. Why is your room so dirty? Why are you in such a bad mood today? Hey, stop doing that. Don't touch this. No, you can't watch TV right now. Why isn't your room clean? No, you can't have that. I'm disappointed with how you did on that test. That is just not realistic. Shouldn't you think about trying something else? I don't think so. You already know the answer. The answer is no. This happens not because you're a bad parent, but rather because you're a good one. You have rules and you enforce them. You have expectations and you push your kids to meet them. You know what's best. You want to keep them safe and you have a house to run. But still, if you're not careful, it can come to be that almost every interaction you have with your kids is negative. It can start to feel from their perspective like an endless cascade of disappointment. And then, before you know it, you've become the voice of discouragement without even thinking about it. Is that who you are? Is that the kind of relationship you want to have? Well, if it isn't, then you need to pay attention. Watch your words. Count your yeses and your noes. Be intentional about what you focus on. Let the little things go. Be positive. August 7th. Playing with your kids is everything. The years before the Civil War were rough on Ulysses S. Grant. He was struggling to make a life for his family. There was sadness about his life, an endless drudgery of frustration and disappointment of one failed career, one hardship after another. There was only one break from this. When Grant opened the front door to his house after work each day, his young son, Jesse, was waiting to challenge him to a fight. Jesse would boast that he could beat his father, and Grant, with faux seriousness, would look at the tiny boy and answer the provocation, "I don't feel like fighting, Jesse, but I can't stand being hectored in this manner by a man of your size." Jesse would then hurl himself at his father until he brought him down. On the ground, Grant would beg for mercy and then shout that it wasn't fair to attack an opponent who had fallen. In just a few short years, Grant's bulldog tenacity and toughness would shock and save the nation. It was Grant who broke the back of the Confederate Army, fighting brutal battle after brutal battle. But those who knew him best knew that at heart he was a softy, that he loved his family more than anything. It doesn't matter what you do for a living or how bleak things might be, playing with your kids is a wonderful thing. Play with them when they're young. Play with them if they're old, if you are old. Have fun with them. Be kids together. Play, play, play. August 8th. Don't wait to be proud. It's a story as old as parenthood itself. The child tries and tries to win the approval of their parent, which never seems to come. There is pain, resentment, bewilderment. Only at the end, after much pain and resentment, it is revealed. The child had the thing they wanted all along. They just never knew. This is the story of Claudia Williams, the daughter of Ted Williams. Only buried in a pile of memorabilia did she find a note left by her impossible-to-please father. "To my beautiful daughter," it said, "I love you, Dad." It's the story of the brilliant publisher, Sonny Mehta. In Mehta's obituary, Roger Cohen wrote, "When Mehta's father, a diplomat, died in Vienna, Mehta found in a desk a folder with every article ever published about him. The pride of his father, who had never complimented his son, was evident." It breaks your heart, though. Why couldn't they have expressed this when they were alive? Was it a generational thing? Did they think that it was helping make their kids better, tougher? Why couldn't they have been more like Jim Volvano's father and given them the gift of being a fan? We'll never know the answer to those questions. What we do know is that we can't do it with our own kids. We can't wait to be proud. We can't keep our feelings for them hidden under piles of paper or in a drawer in our desk. We have to tell them now, we have to show them now that we are rooting for them, that we love them, that we believe in them, that we're proud of them, because we are, and they deserve to know before it is too late. August 9th, we're not raising grass. In his induction speech for the Baseball Hall of Fame in 1984, Harmon Kilbrew told the story of a time he was playing in the front yard with his father and brother. His mom came out to tell them it was time for dinner and admonished them for tearing up the grass. "We're not raising grass," his father replied. "We're raising boys." Success as a parent is not defined by having a car with a spotless back seat. It's not having a perfectly decorated house with fragile things that never get broken. A kid's room should look like it's been played in. A home should feel lived in. We should see their fingerprints everywhere, literally and figuratively. Is your job really to raise a kid that never talks back, who walks in lockstep or tiptoes through life? Or is it to raise a kid with their own opinions and their own dreams, with the confidence to articulate them and the ability to bring them to life? The yard is there to be played in. The bike is made to be ridden, not kept in the garage in pristine condition. Your floors will be scratched, food will be spilled, messes will accumulate, noises will be made. Good. We're not trying to keep a spotless, quiet house. We're raising healthy, well-adjusted, happy children. August 10th. Engage with the slime. For a long time, one of the arbitrary rules in Jeannie Gaffigan's house had to do with where and when and how slime could be made. Maybe your kids are too old to care about slime, but it's not difficult to relate to Jeannie's dilemma. Sure, slime is fun for kids to make, but it's a pain in the ass to clean up. And who do you think is the one left with the scrubber and the paper towels in their hands? At some point, though, Jeannie Gaffigan, a mother of five, and a wife and longtime collaborator of the comedian Jim Gaffigan, had a change of heart about her rules, particularly after a battle with a life-threatening brain tumor. I realized that I never asked, "Can you teach me how to make the slime?" I never engaged with the slime, she said. I engaged with the control of the slime. Life is too short to nix your children's interests because you don't want to deal with the mess afterwards. Think about it. How many negative rules do we have related to things? Food in the living room, shoes on the carpet, toys outside the playroom. These rules are often designed to make our lives easier as parents. But one of the unintended side effects is to make our kids' lives less fun. At the same time, we also seem to have fewer positive rules for ourselves. Why not a rule about being interested? Why not a rule about playing and having fun together? Why not a rule about encouraging their fascinations rather than curtailing them? Let's work with the slime, not against it. August 11th. What kind of voice are you giving them? You hear it all the time. It's been there all your life, that voice in your head, the one that tells you what's right, what you ought to do. This voice can also turn nasty, whispering that you're not good enough, that everyone sees through you, that you'll never measure up. The performance psychologist, Dr. Jim Lohr, has studied countless athletes and elite leaders, and he says that this voice is key to success. "I began to realize," he said in an interview, "what really mattered in a really significant way, the tone and the content of the voice that no one hears. I came to understand the ultimate coach for all of us in life is that private voice." Where does it come from, though? Where did you get that voice originally? It came from your parents, mostly. As he explains, we know it begins to form as early as 5 years of age, and it comes principally from the authority figures in your life, however functional or dysfunctional. And this should sober us up as parents. We are responsible for the voice that will live inside our kids' heads for the rest of their lives. We decide whether that voice will belong to the wise and patient ancestor or the cruel and unpredictable ghost. We decide whether it will be the voice of conscience and kindness or doubt and insecurity. We decide it by what we say to them, by what we show them in each moment of every day. August 12th. Here's what matters.
The best way to make children good is to make them happy. Oscar Wilde.
The author Rich Cohen loves hockey. He loves watching his kids excel at it. And like any parent, the last thing he wants is for them to struggle or worse, be shortchanged, whether it's playing time or respect. In his lovely book, Pee-wee's Confessions of a Hockey Parent, Rich tells one story about a conversation he had with his son's coach. His son wasn't being given the time on the ice that Rich thought he deserved, so he tried to make a case for it. The coach, on the other hand, had no patience. "Let me ask you this," he said. "Is Mika happy?" "Yes," Rich replied. "Is Mika having fun?" "Yes," Rich had to admit. And that's when the coach got him with something that every parent should be reminded of. "Then what do you care?" he said. "If your kids are having fun, if they're happy, if they're learning, if they're building bonds with their teammates, then nothing else matters. Our duty as parents is not to optimize our kids for success. It's to teach them how to be present, how to find the things they love, how to be a good person, how to respond to the situations that life puts them in. That's it. Everything else, what do we care?" August 13th. Be careful of your implications. King George VI referred to his daughters as his pride and joy. To be more specific, he referred to the two of them as pride and joy. Princess Elizabeth was pride, and Princess Margaret was joy. Only with time did the two of them realize the sad implications of this remark, that he was proud of one and had fun with the other, and therefore found less happiness in the former and less pride in the latter. If only it were just a clever remark, if only there hadn't been real truth in it, if his actions hadn't confirmed it, there would have been very little to infer. It's so easy to joke about our easy child or our difficult one, about our favorite, about our special one, about who or what will be the death of us. God knows how many thoughtless asides about our kids have popped out of our mouths in casual conversation. We have to consider the implications of the words we throw about like that, because our kids are listening and they really hear us. They are always trying to understand themselves and their place in the world. The things we say today when they are young will come back to them when they are older, and they will fit those words, for better or for worse, into the narrative of their lives. August 14th. Don't merge like this. Joan Didion didn't get into Stanford. She was crushed. Her father, though, he looked at her and he shrugged. You might think that his lack of empathy added to her pain and frustration, but with time she came to understand that her father had gotten the moment exactly right. I think about that shrug with a great deal of appreciation whenever I hear parents talking about their children's chances, Didion would write in a classic essay on college in 1968. What makes me uneasy is the sense that they are merging their children's chances with their own, demanding of a child he make good not only for himself, but for the greater glory of his father and mother. Her father shrugged because he had not placed any of his identity into what college his daughter got into. Perhaps he could have done a little better at understanding how much her identity had been put into it. But then again, maybe that was the point. He wanted to show her how little it actually mattered, how her success or failure in life was going to be based on something far less superficial than college admissions. And so it must go with us. We encourage our children. We want to set them up to succeed, but we can't merge their glory into our own. We can't let them think they have to impress us, make us proud, or worry that they have let us down or failed us. Certainly, we can't let them think that where they go to school or don't go to school has any bearing on who they are to us or what they can do with their lives. August 15th. It should be the easiest thing in the world. Parenting is very hard. Keeping your kids safe, keeping them fed, keeping them in the best schools, making sure they get good grades in those schools. We have to do all of this as we navigate a world where Murphy's Law is real, where bills have to get paid, where we have our own crap to deal with that no one is going to handle for us. And in that sense, parenting is an impossible job with impossible expectations. Yet, in another sense, being a parent is actually about the easiest job in the world. Because what do they really need? What is really demanded of you? That you love them, that you accept them, that you support and encourage them, that you cheer for them, that you be their biggest fan. Nothing, literally nothing short of death can stop you from doing those things. Seriously, how hard is it to believe in them? How hard is it to be encouraging? How hard is it to remind them that you don't care what happened, what other people say, that you know that they have goodness and potential inside of them? And here's the thing, death can't stop you from doing those things either, because if you do them now, if you give your kids what they need cheerfully, regularly, and sincerely, it will stick with them as a voice in their heads for as long as they and their own children live. August 16th. They need somebody to do this. You might not think of Muhammad Ali as someone who needed someone to believe in him, but that's because you saw him only later in life. You saw the confident boxer, the brilliant self-promoter, the master of his craft, the fearless warrior. But there was a time when he was a scared child, like every other kid. He was a young black boy named Cassius Clay in segregated America who struggled at Central High School in Louisville, Kentucky. His parents, worn down by work and life, expected little of him, the world even less. One person believed in Cassius Clay, however, and it was enough to change everything. Here he is, ladies and gentlemen, his school principal, Atward Wilson, would shout whenever he saw the boy. Cassius Clay, the next heavyweight champion of the world. This guy is going to make $1 million, he would say. And when some teachers wanted to fail Cassius, whose priority was athletics, not academics, Wilson intervened and gave a speech that few ever forgot. "Do you think I am going to be the principal of the school that Cassius Clay didn't finish?" he told them. "He's not going to fail at my school. I'm going to say I taught him." Every kid needs someone like this, someone who believes in them. Why was Muhammad Ali such a great fighter? Because somebody fought for him. And you know who can do this for your kids? Who has to be that first, loudest, most resolute cheerleader? It's you. August 17th. Give them plenty of these.
It never hurts to say a good word for your player. Bill Russell.
Queen Elizabeth II had a strange job. What are her daily duties? It's hard to say. It's easier to describe all the things she didn't do. She never passed laws. She never chose elected leaders. She didn't voice her opinion. She did give out a lot of awards, though, literally hundreds of thousands of them over the course of her 70-year reign. She once said, "People need pats on the back sometimes. It's a very dingy world otherwise." And it's very true. Nobody needs a pat on their back more than your kids. And there's nobody they'd rather get it from than you. Take an extra beat today and let your kids know what is special about them. Give them that pat on the back. August 18th, you are the toy.
It is a happy talent to know how to play. Ralph Waldo Emerson.
Your son asks you to play train, so you get the track down from the shelf. Your daughter wants to do a puzzle, so you start laying out the pieces. Then for some reason that is beyond the grasp of every parent who has ever lived, the moment you do what they want, they suddenly lose interest. Or they don't play by the rules, or they ask for something else, or now they want to move to a different room. If you get exasperated, what toy do you want? You are missing the point, or at least misunderstanding that you see, you are the toy. What they want to play with is you. They don't want to be given a puppet. They want to pull your puppet strings. When you understand this, everything is easier, no matter what age they are. Why is your teenager rebelling? In part to get a rise out of you. Why is your middle schooler being a smart aleck? To see how you'll respond. Why is your toddler calling for water from their bedroom only to change their mind to juice, only to explain that they meant the other juice, only to now ask to go to the bathroom? Because it's funny. Because it's a game. Because they're playing with a little bit of power that they have in this strange, uncontrollable world, their power over the adults who have power over them. So relax. Just go with it. Understand what's actually happening. It's not about the puzzle. It's not about anything. You are the toy. August 19th. You must have their back. When Sir Archibald Southby questioned Randolph Churchill's war record on the floor of Parliament, he hadn't meant anything personal. In fact, right after, he tried to shake Winston Churchill's hand, intending to explain it away as just politics. But no such thing existed to the Churchills. "Do not speak to me," Winston Churchill told the man coldly. "You called my son a coward. You are my enemy. Do not speak to me." Now, Randolph Churchill was not perfect, but that didn't prevent his father from standing up for him, for having his back, and nor should it ever prevent us. Winston Churchill's own father had not supported or believed in his son, and Winston deciding to do better would not make the same mistake. He backed his son, he fought for him, he let Randolph know he could always be counted on. And you have to do the same. Our kids are going to screw up, but they need to know we will never write them off. Our kids need to know that we'll take their side, that we'll fight for them, that we'll never let anyone wrongly abuse or attack them without hearing from us about it. August 20th. Encourage the dream. It's not that parents don't believe in their kids, it's that they know that the world is hard and then they know that the odds are long. And most of all, nobody wants harm or crushing disappointment to come to their children. And that's why we discourage them from dropping out, from trying to make it as a musician, from quitting their job to start a company. We're just worried. Will Ferrell, one of the greatest comedic actors of all time, certainly challenged his parents in this way. "You're going to become a sketch comedian? What?" Even his father, a working musician, had reservations about his pursuing such an uncertain, unstable career. But thankfully, he caught himself before Will came to him for advice. Putting his very natural, understandable worries on the back burner, Roy Lee Ferrell led with support and belief. "You know what?" he said. "You have the skill, but it takes a lot of work. If you don't make it, don't worry about it. You can just try something else." Roy Lee was communicating to Will from his own hard-won experience just how hard and unlikely success was in one of those much dreamed of fields. He was saying, "You're talented and I believe in you, but it's going to be really hard. So hard that if it doesn't work, you have to understand that it's just a reflection on the industry and not on you as a person." And that's an incredible gift to give your children, permission to try, along with permission to fail. The signal that you'll support them either way, that nothing changes based on the path they choose, the heights they reach, or the marks they fall short of. August 21st, don't care more than they do. In another great scene from Rich Cohen's amazing book on parenting through the lens of youth hockey, Rich tries to console his son after he doesn't make the team in what was an extremely unfair process. Rick expected his son would be angry or at least aware of what had happened. He writes, "He was bugged, but he wasn't devastated or even all that upset, which upset me. Why did I care more than he did?" And this is a great question. Why do you care more than they do? Why are you spending so much time telling them they've been hurt when they haven't been? Why do you need them to take everything as seriously as you do? When our kids get older, some of these things will become their problem. But for now, let them have their childhood. They are young. They understand and feel things differently than you do. Don't assume that the adult way is better or necessarily more correct. There is wisdom in their innocence. Defer to it, or at least respect them enough not to corrupt it. August 22nd. This is a tough balance. As parents, we have to figure out the balance between supporting our kids and pushing them. It's like those early days at the park when they find their way to the swing set for the first time. In the beginning, it's all about providing support while they get comfortable with the pendular motion of the swing. Then you start pushing them a little more. But push too hard too soon and they can fly off the front or whip themselves off the back when the swing comes falling back towards the bottom. Eventually, they get used to the ebb and flow of the swing, and they find their grip confidently on the chains. They know how to anticipate the force of ever bigger pushes and the resulting swings in the other direction. And when that finally happens, that's when they can start pumping their legs on their own, sending themselves as high as they can, higher than you ever thought they would be comfortable reaching. As parents, that's the shifting balance we must find and keep at all times if we are to do right by our kids. Because nobody improves in life by simply remaining where they are. The founder of Dell Computers, Michael Dell, has a great mantra in his company related to this idea: pleased, but never satisfied. And perhaps this is a way of thinking about ambition and progress and personal development that we can teach our kids, and with some sensitivity also apply to our own parenting style. Remember, great coaches are harder on their teams when they win than when they lose. They are pleased but never satisfied because they know the team's true potential and they want to help them realize it, just as you must with your kids.